I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS. .com/thrive for 20% off your first order.
What's good? It's your boy Toby. You're listening to Rebel Radio. Fuck you, Josh.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
What did you say, Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio. What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I bring you the rebels who are shaping our culture. I'm your host, Josh Levine. This week, I'm sitting with Toby, whose new album, L'Esprit, is out on Magnetic Moon Records, which is the label from Rob Garza of Thievery Corporation. We have a really interesting discussion about what genres mean and what it's like for a new artist coming up today who's creating without genre as a guardrail. He's a rapper, he's a rock musician, singer, songwriter, all of that. And it's interesting to hear him talk about how he puts all that together and where he draws those lines. We also talk about the upside and downside of the vulnerability and openness that's expected from artists and creators today, and that's definitely a big part of his music, some of the challenges that go along with that. And we talk about his process for learning how to collaborate with his team and what things to let go of. It's a great conversation. I hope you'll enjoy it. Let's get into it right now.
Dude, I'm happy to connect you too. I've been learning about your music and following what you're doing. Looks like you got some really exciting things happening. So I'm excited to dig into it with you.
Hell yeah. And thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. So I always want to start at the beginning. Do you remember the first record you ever bought for yourself?
Ooh. Oh man. Yeah, it's between two. It's either Now That's What I Call Music 19.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember it very, very well. I was listening to it.
What's on volume 19?
Oh man, they had this like really like sentimental Black Eyed Peas song, Where's the Love?
Okay.
Where's the love? Yeah, it had that one. I think it had Feel Good Inc. on it. Too. Okay. I'm pretty sure. So that was my first intro to The Killers.
It's a great record.
And I mean, I'm blanking on, I think it had like some JT on there too. I don't remember it super well, but those three always stood out because I'd play them on loop.
Nice.
I also had the SpongeBob SquarePants movie CD, which I think someone bought for me. I didn't buy it with my own money, but like when that movie came out, like I had that CD and it was kind of tight. It had like the Shins on it. Like I think the Strokes did a song. But wow. take your pick which one you'll use.
That's funny. I mean, I remember when that Now compilation started, I was actually so a couple of friends of mine that started that series, and you know, at the time, I mean, that's, you know, that's going back when compilations were such a big part of our culture and how people discovered music, right? And you know, we didn't, you know, for a lot of people, especially if you weren't familiar with the genre or whatever, right? Like, you're learning about it through these compilations, or you knew the Justin Timberlake song on there, and then it introduced you to a whole bunch of new things and all that. And it's interesting that you know, think about that the role that compilations played back in the day.
It was very introductory. So like, yeah, like you said, like it kind of like inspired me or nudged me to explore discographies.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like you said, like I found one song that I liked. I didn't end up like going down the Black Eyed Peas rabbit hole, I'll admit, but Gorillaz definitely.
Okay.
So yeah, it made me think about like how artists, you know, sometimes you only get one chance to grab a listener's ear with one song.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to build your category or your catalog rather, so that when they check you out, they'll like everything else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
No, that's really interesting. And so that kind of set you on your journey. How'd you start making music? What was your first time on the mic?
Oh, on the mic? I mean, I was doing the regular thing. I played piano when I was a kid. I was in a couple of bands in middle school, high school. I used to play the drums, actually.
Hmm.
I picked up the mic when I was in high school, and there is this kid who went to a different school who was like rapping, like he really wanted to be like a rapper, but I didn't like his songs. And I was kind of a goofball. So like I wrote diss records. And I didn't even know him. Thinking back, it was really mean. It's like this kid with a dream. And I'm like, I'm going to shit on your dream. And I'm going to prove that rapping is easy. I've never done it before. So I did that. And we went back and forth. It was a cute little thing. Like people got involved and excited. It's like, oh, when are you going to drop the next diss thing? But I think in the middle of that, I realized I really loved it. It combined like all the poetry and writing and literature stuff that I'm super into, and mm-hmm. gave it kind of like a musical outlet. So
nice. Yeah. I mean, that's interesting that, you know, disc culture, you know, battle culture is such a big part of hip hop. I think in some ways it's, you know, I think in some ways it's what's driven hip hop to be so dominant, is that people are always trying to outdo each other in a way that's a little bit different than other genres. I think, you know, there were quiet rivalries more so in rock or jazz or whatever, right? But this is like two people really going at each other. And I think, you know, we've documented the downside to that, but there's also, I think, an upside to that, right? That it pushes people to do better and to evolve and progress in the art. I wonder if there's any specific lessons you took from that experience, other than maybe like, I don't have to, you know, leave this kid alone. He's just trying to do his thing.
I mean, eventually we I think we buried the hatchet. I'm not sure. It was easily over 10 years ago, but I feel like there came a point where me and him talked it out and was like, hey, this is fun and quirky, but like, I'm serious about this. And it seems like you're serious about this. So like, I wish you the best. I think the main takeaway was I needed to get better fast. I think in using him as kind of like the animus for my creativity, I realized that the person I'm in direct competition with really is myself.
Mm.
So rather than try to beat somebody else, I need to beat like who I was yesterday and write harder bars or more introspective shit. Like just like constantly challenge myself. I fell in love with the challenge aspect of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big lesson. If you can get that at that stage of your career, that's huge. So how do you use that now? How do you challenge yourself now? What does that look like?
Sure. I mean, I feel like I'm not going to say like I've mastered rapping, but in rapping for as long as I've been rapping, 10 years, I I feel like there's just more that piques my interest now. Like I got really into singing and melody. I'm picking up instruments. I don't know if you see the guitar there, but now I'm more focused on being a well-rounded musician. You know, rap was a tool in the toolbox, in an arsenal, and something that I love, and it's something that I'm always going to incorporate and do. But I think just like staying true to my artistry and staying honest about like my inclinations, that's involving more melodic elements, voice training, just like listening to different singers that I'm discovering and also loved in the past and seeing what works for them and applying it. I think the challenge now is just more growth, more expanded growth.
Is that, I mean, I think there's a generational thing, you know, the generation that I came from, you know, rappers were rappers. They were not musicians. They didn't, you know, most of them, some exceptions, but most of them didn't consider themselves musicians in that same way. And it was actually, you know, at some phases it was actually looked down upon, like if you were too musical, right?
Right.
Obviously all that's gone now. But I wonder for you, like, was there any tension in that decision? Was there a moment when you're like, am I a rapper? Am I a musician? Do I have to give something up in order to make that change?
Oh, like,
or is,
like
that, or is that just all behind us in culture?
So that's a really good point. I mean, especially when I started rapping, like 2011, 2012, 2013, I had this purist, you know, mindset. I was very like, I told myself, I was like 17. I was like, I'm not writing hooks. Like it's about the bars, 64 bar verses. Like that's all that's what's true to me. That's true hip hop to me.
That's right. You know?
And I think really what helped me break out of that mentality was just exposure to different things, like finding that I was getting grumpy a lot of the times. And if I just like stopped, zoomed out and learned what to appreciate about different styles of music, I'd be benefiting myself more than just staying in a rut, because especially at the time I was surrounded by better rappers. I was surrounded by people who had been doing it for years longer than I had. So trying to keep up with them and trying to constantly subjugate myself to their metric was just making myself frustrated. So I think early on, I kind of ingrained in myself, like, no, if you want to be good or better or the best, you have to set yourself apart, and you need to be more open to experimentation and you know, diversifying, because if you try to do it like anybody other than yourself, you're gonna lose and you're gonna feel bad.
Hey guys, support our show by supporting our newest advertiser, Apple Card. It's time to reboot your credit card with Apple Card. Apple Card gives you up to 3% daily cash back on everything you buy. It's real cash that never expires or loses value. Use it to grab a morning coffee or pay back a friend. Plus, there isn't a single fee. Apply now in the Wallet app on your iPhone and start using it right away. Subject to credit approval, daily cash is available via an Apple Cash Card or as a statement credit. See Apple Card customer agreement for terms and conditions. Apple Cash Card is issued by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Variable APRs range from 13.24% to 24.24% based on credit worthiness. Rates as of August 1st, 2022.
So when you're in that purist phase, who are you listening to? What were some of your big influences? And was there someone who stands out to you as an influence as you were kind of moving out of that phase that like inspired you to?
Yeah, I mean, when I discovered hip hop, I discovered hip hop with a best friend of mine at the time. He was just feeding me MF Doom. He was feeding me Mos Def, Nas. I was listening to Illmatic just like on loop in high school. I discovered early Kanye, early Jay a little bit afterwards. And Kanye, obviously, he was kind of towing the gap and being a little more experimental with the singing and whatnot. But I think it was around when I found Childish Gambino. He was someone, and I'll admit, like, his early stuff was rough, but at the time he was saying things and doing things that I didn't think you could get away with, you know, and he was being really, really open and really, really expressive and really, really like vulnerable too. Like he was doing a lot of vulnerable music. So I think falling in love with that and falling in love with just like that, that understanding of artistry, on top of the fact that he was doing, you know, everything else with the acting and the writing and whatnot. There was a lot of admiration there and there was a lot of like inspiration there. So that was probably a time where I was like, nah, I gotta, it's okay to branch out and it's okay to set yourself apart and carve out your own lane. That's not going to look like anybody else's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I don't want to make this all about our age difference, but I do think like, you know, that's such an interesting, you know, change in hip hop. I think in culture, you know, in society, right? But specifically in hip hop is that idea of vulnerability, which, you know, for my generation and you know, all of early hip hop, it was not on the table.
Frowned upon,
yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, I've talked about it on this show before, I think to some extent, we weren't even aware of it just as humans, right? We weren't, you know, I'm growing up in the 80s, you know, I never woke up feeling like, oh, I'm sad, but I can't tell anybody I'm sad. You're just not even in tune with that going on in yourself.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so, you know, I think it is definitely part of a bigger change, but also it helped to bring on that change, right? Because when Kanye, when Gambino, when, you know, famous people are expressing those types of emotions, that becomes comfortable for everybody else, right? And that's part of the power of music. And obviously, if we look at where we are now, you know, in society and music, that's all opened up, right? And we can be, you know, artists can be gay or straight or you know, don't have to follow any rules, frankly.
Yeah, they could just be honest. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Is there a downside to all that? You know, now and as you're making music?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I think what a lot of people don't realize is that just because I have made the conscious decision to talk about myself in a way that's a little more open or personal, it doesn't give them the right or the inclination to familiarize themselves with me personally. Like you can familiarize yourself with the experience because I believe in unity through specificity. I think the more specific you can be about something, the higher the likelihood that you'll strike or resonate with someone more deeply. You know, we're not all that different. You know, we all go to Burger King or whatever. Like there's like very specific things about our lives, like the minutia of our lives that we can all relate to. But when you do stuff like that and you resonate like that, some people can't take it for what it is and they align themselves more with who you are or a version of themselves that they've created in their minds of who you are, and for lack of a better word, they just like feel like they know you better than they actually do. Cause you know, like what I'm choosing to put in my music is what I'm choosing to put in my music. You know, there's things I'm holding back. There's things that I'm not saying. There's details I'm leaving out. I'm still writing a story. I'm still trying to make engaging content. But I think when it's, you know, a little more peeled back than like surface level, I got cars, I got money, I got et cetera, which I love that type of music. I love it. But I don't know how to make it, you know, like that's just not my artistry. So when I do the things I do, it hits, and sometimes it hits people in a way that makes them feel like they know me better than they actually do, you know, and it's not a huge downside, but it's something that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the challenge of anybody that's in the public eye right now. Right, is you know, the veil to some extent has been lifted. We expect to have access to our, you know, celebrities, entertainers, influencers 24/7, we expect to have this kind of like intimate relationship with them, which is good and bad, right? There's, you know, you could probably profit off that in certain ways that maybe people haven't been able to in the past, but also, I totally get the downside to that of, you know, of having to always be on and having people feel like they know your life and they can insert themselves into it whenever they want.
Right. Yeah. It gets a little overwhelming at times. I'm learning to manage it, but it happens, you know, I have to remember that not everybody makes music and not everybody gets it.
Sure.
So when it hits them differently, I can't fault them for that because just like my background is different and my,
yeah,
you know, the way I move is different. So,
yeah. Yeah. So in terms of how, you know, how this became a career for you, like, cause you're in school, you're playing music, you're battling this dude, whatever. Was there a moment when something broke through or you started to feel like, okay, this is now a career? And was there like a plan come together or is it just like one foot in front of the other?
I would say the latter, honestly. I tried different things. I come from a very traditional family, so they really wanted me to have like a job. So
what was the job?
I mean, my mom always says I could have been like a lawyer. Okay. She was like really sad that I didn't want to do that. I don't blame her. She just wanted me to have stability, you know.
Sure. Yeah, of course. Different,
so she that's the whole story. But I think when I realized what I wanted to do, and how I wanted to do it, I just like deluded myself to thinking that there was nothing else that I could do. I just told myself, like, look, like nothing else makes you happy. Like literally nothing else makes you happy. And not just like music, but just like creativity and executing on my own terms and like writing and you know, creating worlds and creating universes and having music be a part of those universes. Like nothing else makes me happy. Nothing else fulfills me. So I never saw the cliff.
Sure. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I wonder, is that really delusion or is it necessary? Like, I sometimes feel like, being creative for a living is hard, right? And there's so many pitfalls and so many roadblocks that I think if you can really picture yourself doing something else, you probably should.
That's an interesting take. I think, and this is a little fucked up, but I think it's delusion only if it doesn't work. You know, it's the paradox of perpetual energy. You know, it's a self-sustaining thing. I think, at least for me, I honestly do know and understand that the things I want are well within my grasp. Like, I just need, I like the same way a doctor goes through 8 years of schooling to become a doctor. Like, I have to put in my time and hours. I just don't know how many they are. You know, it's a matter of time for me. I just need to keep doing it. And the second I feel like I don't want to do it or I can't do it is when the realization will set in that like, oh, hey, you deluded yourself for X amount of time into thinking that this was you or thinking that this was what you were supposed to be. But until that day comes, which I don't think it ever will, I'm living in a reality as opposed to a delusion.
Okay. I like that. So what was the song? Was there a song that you put out that really connected and got, you know, made you feel like that was a reality, not a delusion?
Yeah, actually. It was kind of like in the midst of my like battle back and forth with this kid. I went through like a bad breakup. And just like found out like a lot of stuff during that breakup. And I Wrapped Over Little Things by Lily Allen, like the indie song, like the pop song. Mm-hmm. I just like found an instrumental and I wrote a song over it. And I kind of did it all in one day. My engineer was cool enough to just let me go in and do my thing. And my friends told me that when they heard it, they started crying because they didn't know what I was going through with all of that. And they, and like the way I worded everything and the way that like, I like put those raw feelings, because it was literally like the day of or the day after or whatever, those raw feelings into music. And got that reaction, I was like, oh shit, this is more powerful. Like, this isn't a joke. Like, this isn't something that's like, it can be fun, but I'm fucking with like serious, there are serious forces at play. So I think that like realization and that maturity kind of set in and was like, oh, okay. Like, not only is there more to this, but you may be more tethered to it than you even realize. So like, keep exploring that and keep seeing how far that's going to take you, because there's power here. Like, you have something that you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's huge. Let's talk about the new project. So you have an album, L'Esprit.
Yep.
And I thought it's really interesting that this is, so if I understand, it's on Magnetic Moon Records, which is Rob Garza from Thievery Corporation. It's his label. So tell me about that. I'm a huge Thievery fan. I actually have Eric Hilton coming up in a couple weeks on the show as well. And I've, you know, been loving those guys from day one. So I was excited to see that, and I'm curious, you know, what it means being a rapper, although I know you're more than that. But you know, tell me about the experience of working with Rob, being on his label, on kind of what that means for your career and what you're doing.
Absolutely. Rob's the homie first and foremost. I got to shout him out. He's helped me more than I think he'll ever realize. Just like from the time he found me and up until now, like, we've been super tight. And he's a friend too. Like, he let me stay with him when I went up to San Francisco. Like, he's a buddy for sure. Working with him has been great. Working with the label has been great. They're invested. And you know, like, they saw a talent in me that I feel like for a while I had to kind of struggle to prove to people, just because the industry saturated and, you know, a rapper here is a rapper there, but they really understood what I was going for. They understood what I wanted to achieve. Like, I think my goals were, you know, something that they could get down with. And yeah, it's been pretty smooth. Like, Rob really cares. He actually texted me the other day. He was giving me a congrats, and he said we're gonna hang out when he gets back or something.
Nice.
But yeah, no, he's a good friend, and the label's filled with good, really talented people. So no complaints.
Was there something, you said he kind of found you or learned about you. Was there something you did to get on his radar? Were you?
So, I mean, the story basically is he works very closely with the producers of my album, Smile. Mm-hmm. My best friends, I've known Ruben. There's a producer duo. I've known one of them for over 20 years, and I've known the other one for 10, and he was my first producer engineer. Nice. So there's blood there. Like, we're family. So he was working closely with them. He was always going over to the studio, which I was working out of as well. You know, kind of rubbing elbows. We'd order pizza, talk and stuff. I got to listen to early Garza demos,
nice.
And just like chat and get cool. And then he was playing a festival down in Mexico that I got invited to tag along with. And the whole car ride there, he was just like, we hang out all the time. I don't know your deal. Like, what's good? Like, what are you up to? I showed him some demos, kind of told him my whole story. And he's like, this is tight. Give me a couple days. And true enough, true to his word, we get back to LA after the festival, and he's got this whole operation set up. I'm having meetings with with people that he's starting the label with. I'm showing them stuff. Like, one thing led to another.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Hey guys, support our show by supporting our newest advertiser, Apple Card. It's time to reboot your credit card with Apple Card. Apple Card gives you up to 3% daily cash back on everything you buy. It's real cash that never expires or loses value. Use it to grab a morning coffee or pay back a friend. Plus, there isn't a single fee. Apply now in the Wallet app on your iPhone and start using it right away. Subject to credit approval, daily cash is available via an Apple Cash Card or as a statement credit. See Apple Card customer agreement for terms and conditions. Apple Cash Card is issued by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Variable APRs range from 13.24% to 24.24% based on credit worthiness. Rates as of August 1st, 2022.
So far, I guess, you know, it's still a fairly early relationship. What have you learned from him so far? I mean, he's a guy who's kind of, to your point, he's built a career and a life in music that, you know, few people have done in terms of the longevity. What are you learning from him so far?
Oh, first and foremost, everything you do has got to be cool. Cause he's a cool dude. He just real snappy and he's got like cool vibes to him. So, I mean, presentation is important. I think that's something that I kind of forewent because I was so focused on the creativity, but presentation is definitely important. I've learned that like collaboration over anything is necessary. Like you can try to do it all on your own, but at the end of the day, someone's gonna need to touch what you're working on. And just like prioritizing and valuing your relationships, you know, I think keeping those solid is definitely, you know, it doesn't hurt. And it's also just like better long run.
Sure. Nice. Just thinking about the role that labels play, right? So, you know, seeing an artist signed to Magnetic Moon as opposed to Def Jam or Cash Money or right, like tells you something maybe about the artist or so I guess what is the like how is that impacting where you're heading as an artist?
Well, it's definitely there's a leverage there. I can't deny that being a signed artist as opposed to being an unsigned artist.
Sure.
It comes with different perks and benefits. I love that they're boutique and I love that, you know, I'm a priority, you know, I don't know if I'd get the same sort of eyes and attention over at Def Jam, to knock Def Jam, but they're interested in development. They're interested in building the story, you know, and starting from the ground up and doing what it takes to like, actually like, you know, put a newer artist on as opposed to like, you should be famous already. You don't have 30 million TikToks, something. Like they're willing to do the work. So
nice.
It's a benefit for sure.
Yeah, that's cool. You were talking earlier about sort of, you know, your journey being, you know, kind of moving beyond being a rapper to thinking more broadly. You know, I always wonder about, you know, how you think about genre, right? Like, I think in some ways, kind of the old days of like, this, you know, these sounds fit into this genre and these ones don't, right? I think in some ways that was much easier.
Right.
Because you had pretty, you know, you had guardrails that, so I wonder when, you know, you're making music that, you know, sort of defies genre or incorporates multiple genres. I don't know. I'm curious how you think about that. And like, what guardrails do you set for yourself then if it's not, you know, 808 sounds or whatever, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, I have one hard and fast rule. Don't touch country. No. No. <Okay. laughs> I've actually I try not to think about genre at all. I know it's like a contentious debate amongst people who fuck with music, but like for me personally, unless I have to talk about it in genre terms, when I'm creating, I don't think about genre. I think about sound. And okay. I think like, cool, maybe I'm rapping here, but maybe it's like a salsa beat or something. Like, does that make it a rap song or does that make it a salsa song? If I mm-hmm. focus on that too much, then I'm going to put rules on myself that may compromise the product, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think about sound and I think about archiving and pulling from different archives. So especially on the record, like I needed to tell a narrative. I needed to move things along, and I needed to do so in a way that was most organic and true to the material. And I don't know if I could have done that with just rap songs. I don't know if I could have done that with just rock songs, you know?
Sure.
Like it all sprung from a well of like authentic inspiration. So on Day by Day, the reference for that was like Lucid Dreams by the late Juice WRLD. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is perfect. Like, this is the same like story I'm trying to tell. And there's already like kind of like a template for it. So like, why not? I just trust that. And then you move on, you get like softer material, you get too fucking cocky. Like you just kind of play it by ear. And there's a bunch mm-hmm. of artists that I listened to that definitely showed me a bit how to do so and how to do it right. So I was fortunate in that regard.
Yeah, definitely. No, I mean, I think it's really interesting. I think we're in a time when all those rules are being rewritten, right? And you know, the music industry for 100 something years was based on either radio formats or what section of the record store you were supposed to go to find what you're going to like, right? And you know, in the physical, in that record business, you had to pick one, right? Because you had to make things easier for consumers, for programmers, for all of that, right? And now we don't have that. And I think, you know, it's interesting to hear you talk about, you know, you do have to give yourself some rules. Otherwise, you know, there's this infinity to pull from. And you could kind of like never finish a project because, you know, you're always just exploring.
Yeah. I mean, it's like cooking. Like you wouldn't put hot sauce in a birthday cake, you know? You follow. Sure. You follow what right. you can, but then you got to mix it up.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what is, you said there's a narrative to the record. So tell me about that. What's the story and how, and, you know, I'm sure you recorded a lot of songs that aren't on the record, I assume. And so how do you, you know, tell me about that process of shaping the narrative and deciding what fits and what doesn't.
Absolutely. So my first art like creative background is writing. I was just like always writing like poems and stories and whatnot, so of mm-hmm. course for my debut I wanted to include some sort of like narrative, and it follows a lot of events that are inspired by things that have happened to me, but it also draws from things that have happened to people I know and love, things that I've heard, just like inclinations or thoughts that I've, you know, had and pondered. And it's basically telling the story of someone who doesn't honestly believe in himself and who's sinking deeper and deeper and deeper into like a despair, so to speak, which I think is super relatable. I think we've all had like those rock bottom spiral moments. But it's juxtaposed by the voice. And that's where the line gets blurry, because it is my actual grandma speaking on the record. She's saying really uplifting, positive, you know, motivational things while all of this like downturn is taking place. So it's kind of like, if I could, I don't know if this is on video, but it's like, I'm going down here and then she's keeping me up here. And yeah, it kind of all resolves in the end with this like declaration of relatability. Like I think the track itself is Similar Road. It's like, look, like you're not alone here. I've done this myself. Like I've been here. you're gonna be okay no matter how far down you went. Like, there's an up, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not all down. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean I'm leaving it a lot up to interpretation. The album means something real, like, specific to me, but in having conversations about it, I'm realizing it means so much to so many other people that I'm just like,
sure,
hands off about it, you know.
I mean, I think that's what great art is supposed to do, right? It's allows people to enter that world and translate it into whatever it means for them.
Absolutely, I agree.
Nice. So shift gears a little bit. I know you're also doing stand-up comedy. I watched some of it on your YouTube. Tell me about doing those two things, you know, music and comedy at the same time. I'm curious, what are you learning from one that you're using in the other?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're not that different. I love getting this question because I feel like I get to blow the lid on, like, whistleblow on the comedy and music at the same time. But they're not different, you know? Performance is performance. You put a mic in my hand, I got to do something, right? And with comedy, timing is everything. I will say that, like, comedic timing and musical timing have a lot to learn from each other, you know? Mm. So with comedy,
give me an example.
Sure. With comedy, you gotta set up a joke in such a way that acknowledges the spacing between your response and the setup itself, you know, like the punchline and setup. And in that space between, you have a captive audience. They're waiting for you to say what you're gonna say. So how does that translate over to music? It's the same thing, like a build up and a drop. You have a captive audience waiting to hear what's going to happen. So the choices you make in both situations, whether you fake them out, whether you pop the balloon, whether you actually give them that release, like, you're gonna have different effects, and you're gonna have different reactions to those things, and just being cognizant of those possible reactions makes them very, very similar. You know, and also charisma. You got to be a charismatic person if you want to succeed on a stage.
Sure. Yeah, that's great. I love that. I am curious. You're doing comedy under the name Reggie B, and then music under the name Toby, right?
Yep.
Why separate those two? Is there an upside, a downside? Is that something you thought about?
It is. So obviously Reggie B is just the name I go by. Mm-hmm. And I looked, obviously, at Donald Glover, Childish Gambino was one of my, you know, creative, you know, stars. So I saw the merit in that he could do really whatever he wanted, as long as he made it easy for people to understand. Like, if you go to a Childish Gambino show and he starts, like, acting, you're gonna be a little thrown off, even though it's the same person behind both. Sure. You know? And same, like, I mean, I did see him in concert, and he did a little bit of freestyle at the end, but, like,
right,
Donald Glover does stand up, you know, or he acts and whatnot. So I thought segmenting it in that way would just make it easier for other people to understand. I could do either as both, or mm-hmm. it makes no difference to me. It's the same shit.
No, that makes sense. I think it's so interesting. And we were talking about it earlier, you know, and I'm guilty of it too, but I think, you know, I'm fascinated that we have so much trouble understanding that music is fictional, right? Even when it's autobiographical, it's always, you know, like you said before, it's a version of yourself, or it's a narrative that you're putting out. And we get that with actors. We get that with, you know, we don't get that with musicians. We don't, it's so hard for us to understand that these lyrics that you're saying that you may or may not have even written is not just you speaking, you know, the literal truth of your life.
Yeah.
And we have such a hard time with that. And like I said, I do too, because I, you know, I see my favorite artists saying something or doing something that feels off character, and I'm all mad about it. And
yeah, you know, whatever. No, I totally hear you. I think there's a certain sanctity with which we hold musicians.
For sure.
And it's kind of why like a lot of people get upset when they have opinions on the internet, you know?
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, we hold them we have a sanctity for them. It's like, you know, right. You're this person. You're supposed to be this person all the time. So they're right. Kind of just stuck in that. Yeah. So I like doing the Reggie B stuff because it gives me a break.
Yeah, that's cool. So you talked about Gambino. Is there a model for what you're trying to do? Is it him, or are there others that you look to for inspiration? Or is it still one foot in front of the other and kind of make it up as you go?
I mean, I feel like at this point, I'm a little too old to make it up. I gotta have a plan. But okay. Gambino's North Star. Like I'm not trying to copy or emulate or do sure. what he's doing, but yeah. he's the person that I've seen since I was 16 and he was like 26. Like I think when he was my age now, essentially, make it work. So in what he did and what he's doing, there's definitely a lot to draw from while I write my own story. Sure. But yeah, there's him, Will Smith, obviously there's a bunch of actors who rap and a bunch of rappers who act and whatnot.
Yeah.
More than I think we care to name, but you gotta have a plan. And the plan for now is do it all at once. Make people comfortable with that. I'm gonna do everything at once, so.
Nice, yeah. So tell me about that. What's the next year look like?
Oh man, I mean, work has been good. I'm booking. I'm playing shows. I'm doing stand up. I'm writing. I actually got the chance to write for a sketch comedy series that premiered on YouTube, which was awesome. So more gigs like that.
What's it called?
I mostly blame myself. I'm in the second episode as a co-writer and talent.
Yeah, nice.
And yeah, I mean, it's going to be, I don't want to say more of the same, but because the scale and the level are going to increase, but it's kind of that. It's more of the same. It's more music. It's more acting. It's more stand-up. It's more writing. It's more, maybe I'll start directing. You never know. These opportunities kind of come up out of nowhere. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Definitely want to set myself up for tour. That's a goal.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. So you mentioned collaboration, and I know, you know, we talked a little bit about the label. You know, we met through your publicist. You know, I saw on your Instagram, your manager, agent, you know, it was a big team around you. So tell me about that, because, you know, one of the things that always fascinates me is I think when you're building a career like yours, you're the CEO, right? And you're thrust into building a business that is, you know, ultimately you're also the product, but you're also the one who runs this business, and you got to, you know, surround yourself with the right people. We've heard all the horror stories of people who surround themselves with the wrong people,
right?
Or how those relationships can suffer. So tell me about that, like, how you think about collaboration in that context and with that team, and how you rely on them for certain things or don't.
Yeah, sure. I mean, number one thing I look for whenever I choose to work with anybody is their care level. I learned the hard way that when you work with people who might not care, that'll make everything else suffer, because it's mm-hmm. shaky ground to depend on. It's unstable, just like feelings all around.
Yeah.
So more than anything, I look for people who care about what I'm doing, who know about what I'm doing and can like talk about it, you know, efficiently, and who want to elevate it. Luckily I've found a team of people who do just that. Nice. And in regards to like being the product and being the boss, my most recent development that I'm still admittedly still struggling with is learning to let go and trust in the ideas of people that aren't me. That's difficult for anybody, especially when you're working with stuff that's super close to your heart. but they're there for a reason, and they're competent and they're talented, just like I like to think I am. So
is there something you can think of that's been tough to let go of that you had to figure out how to do?
A lot of it is the image stuff. A lot of it is the, you know, like we gotta think about the presentation of this. Cause I'm a pretty easygoing dude. I like my shit in my, like, you're literally in my room right now. Like,
yeah,
very easygoing dude. And for me, the creativity and the artistry has always been forefront, like utmost, like I never felt like prioritizing the packaging of what I was doing, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought it would speak for itself, but that's mm-hmm. largely unrealistic. And I know that, like, I carry that within my heart. Before I got signed, I was working with that mentality, and it was just
sure
because it's saturated, you know. Yeah. You got to stand out and you got to set yourself apart. So
yeah, I mean, I think that's a really, I'm glad you said that, because I think it's a big challenge, right? And in the sense that, you know, you're 100% right. Image matters, presentation matters. I believe there is no such thing as good music or good art. There's only the ones that speak to us. And for everybody, that's different, right? And a lot of it is how it's presented to you and who you learn about it from. And what, you know, sometimes the visual can catch your eye, and then that's what draws you in, and now you're in this world and whatever, right? Or you see somebody, you know, dressed a certain way or presenting themselves a certain way, and you just relate to it. So I think all that matters. And at the same time, kind of to your point, it has to be presented, it has to be honest to you.
Yeah.
Right? Like you can't play a character that's too far away from who you really are, and, you know, or that's not sustainable.
No. It becomes a workout every day, and then you're going
to. Absolutely. Yeah. So no, I that's great. And that's actually, you know, I wish more artists would rely on their teams as they go through that process. Cause I think it's also really hard to do on your own. And maybe Madonna, or there's, you know, there's the rare person who has this vision that's going to carry them for 50 years and they can figure it all out, you know, by themselves. Although I think she would say she's got, you know, the right team around her.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, like, yeah. Here's the thing, like, especially with the product itself, artists are almost exclusively doing the heavy lifting there, you know, sure. Whether yeah. or not they have their own writers or whatnot, like they're the creative vision behind the mm-hmm. actual product. So to take that exhausting, you know, labor and effort and to say, all right, now you got to concept all of this other marketing stuff, that's just largely impossible, man. That's largely
for sure.
impossible. There's Absolutely. Always gonna be a different voice, you know. So
yeah. No, I love that. All right, let me do a quick lightning round before I let you get out of here.
Hit me. Let's go.
What's your favorite city to travel to?
Chicago. Used to be New York.
What happened?
I went to Chicago twice this year and I fell in love with it.
Oh, okay. Chicago stepped up. New York didn't fall down.
Yeah, it was that. It was that, literally.
All right, cool. Who's your favorite DJ?
Favorite DJ? Ooh. I want to say, I'm blanking. I know so many DJs. I'm going to temp answer Questlove. I like how he spins.
Questlove's dope. What's the last great book you read or listened to?
Last great book I read. Did I have to finish it or could I currently be reading it? American Gods. Neil Gaiman is one of the greatest.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. What movie do you think you've seen the most in your life?
Hot Rod. Fucking love Hot Rod. I love Hot Rod so much.
Nice. Who is somebody you've learned a lot from that you haven't met?
Oh, that's a really good question. Dominic Fike.
Okay.
I love how he's handling his whole ordeal. Like he's mastermind.
I don't know anything about his ordeal.
He finessed like a $4 million deal out of Columbia
with
a new project out while he's kind of locked up. So like I think that's super impressive. And his handle and understanding of his art and his imagery, he's a phenomenal songwriter, like all across the board. He's definitely someone to learn from for independent artists.
Awesome. Last one, if I worked for you, what's something I would hear you say over and over?
Bet. I said bet.
All right. Nice. Well, dude, thanks for doing this, man. It's so much fun talking with you. Everybody listening, check out his spree and check out the comedy and check out, you know, we'll be following everything you're doing.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me.
And that was Toby on Rebel Radio. Make sure you check out L'Esprit out on Magnetic Moon Records. Check out his comedy under Reggie B on YouTube. And most importantly, come back next week for more Rebel Radio. Peace.